When we're talking about who created Miss Piggy and developed her into the superstar that she became, obviously the first name on that list is Frank Oz, but there are other people who also deserve credit for this bizarre practical joke that the Muppets played on the world in the 1970s. There's Bonnie Erickson, who created the puppet. There's Jerry Jewell as the head writer, Michael Frith, who developed Piggy's persona in print. And then there's Calista Hendrickson, Miss Piggy's costume designer, starting with the second season of The Muppet Show. Calista's responsible for getting Piggy out of that gray satin dress and into an astonishing range of outfits that she wore on the show, as well as the first three movies, the Miss Piggy calendars, Miss Piggy's Guide to Life, and an endless series of photo shoots for licensed merchandise. During the Muppet Show years, Calista did some interviews for newspapers, including the New York Times, where, to step back for a second, they printed breathless, adoring interviews praising the woman who designs clothes for this make-believe pig puppet. And the thing that really stands out in those interviews is that Calista Hendrickson had a vision for Miss Piggy that complemented what Frank Oz and Jerry Jewell and Michael Frith were doing, but added her own unique and distinct take on who Miss Piggy is as a character. I'm just going to give you a couple quotes. From the New York Times, Miss Piggy's not aware of the fact that she's overweight. She dresses as if she's 30 pounds lighter. And here's another one from the Philadelphia Inquirer. I see her as someone who spends a lot of time in front of the mirror, always adding a few too many accessories. But no matter how silly it is, she always manages to be alluring at the same time. So Calista had a real idea of who Miss Piggy was and how she felt about herself. And her costume designs really brought the pig to life. And today on the show, we're going to hear all about it.
I can't give you anything but love, baby. That's the only thing I've plenty of, baby.
Kissy, kissy, and welcome to another episode of the Fantastic Miss Piggy podcast. I'm Danny Horn, and this podcast chronicles my journey to learn everything there is to know about that divine swine, the incomparable Miss Piggy. It's a special day today, and I have a special co-host for this episode returning to the show, filmmaker, designer, illustrator, and bon vivant, Peter Savieri. Kissy, kissy, Peter.
Hello, Denny.
How are you doing? Welcome back.
I'm good. Welcome myself back.
And of course, our guest today, the one and only Calista Hendrickson. Kissy, kissy, Calista.
Hi, kissy,
Welcome to the show.
kissy. Well, here I am. I'm delighted to be here. It's one of the favorite times of my life, so I like to look back on it and remember those days. I was, as I was saying earlier, I always think I was in the right place at the right time and just fell into this job in a way that I hadn't planned. I hadn't even planned to have a career. I had two young children at home. I was going to be a full-time mom. And then this show came along, which was too good to be true. You know that Bonnie Erickson and I had been working together in various off-Broadway costume shops and with each other over several years. She had a son. I had two sons, and we compared notes about how to juggle motherhood and career.
What were you doing, and how you got started with the Muppets?
Well, I'd been called upon to help them finish up the first season of the Muppet Show. That was in a crunch time, and so I came in and worked a week or so. And they shipped it out. And then in the fall, when they were back, I guess, I came in to do some other stuff for Sesame Street. They'd call on me just because I was a costume person and could whip something up quickly. Then I heard that they were doing this show, the Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas, which was a very ambitious show that Jim had decided to take on that involved the puppets rowing a rowboat down a river. And it was the first time they used remote control mitts that Oz Fizz Office had made for them. That's when they first tried them out. So what was unusual about Emmett Otter, it came from a children's book, and the characters were all more like Beatrix Potter, little dressed up woodland creatures, and they were full body puppets. They were not just to the hips. So that was a very exciting possibility, that job, and I grabbed it. I thought, oh, this is perfect.
And they knew you just because you knew Bonnie Erickson?
Well, because I had come in and done some costume work in the shop on and off for a couple of years.
Okay.
The first job I did, actually, I had a shop set up at home, and they sent me Big Bird's legs. And I sewed the trim on, and my kids were quite intrigued with that.
I bet.
But, you know, on and off, there'd be jobs where Bonnie was in a pinch and she'd call on me. So then Bonnie was going off to start her own business, and she dropped out, and I could step right in and say, I'll do it. I'd be happy to do it. That sounds like a great job. And we quit. And Don Celine was still there at the Muppets, John Celine and Kermit Love, and some of the old timers that I got to learn more about puppetry through them. Foz Fazakis, who I remember my sessions with him, with his mocked up rowboat and putting the Emmett Otter puppet on it and seeing if he could really, you know, row the oars, and that I wanted to be sure the costume didn't limit his movement in any way. And I just kind of got hooked on these people that were such beautiful craftsmen. It was at the New York Workshop that was on East 67th Street, which then the top floor of that building became the photo studio that I worked a few years later. So Emmett Otter was, it was a whirlwind, as they always were. The jobs went, you know, just happened really quickly. We wouldn't have a whole lot of time, but, you know, we were maybe two thirds of the way through. And then somebody said, what about the shoes? And somebody and I start molding little latex shoes to go up, you know, lace up boots and things made of latex. But there was a lot of craft technology that was really appealing. One of the things that really won me over about working in the workshop where they're building the puppet and then dressing them was I could talk with the puppet builders about the body shapes. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, there's a character, Gretchen Fox, who has a green satin dress, and she's very haughty Victorian. And so I could explain to Mari, who was building it, you know, if you do this powder pigeon corseted look of a Victorian lady, then it's going to be the perfect shape for the dress. Mm. And that kind of collaboration was just, you know, overwhelming to me because...
Yeah, and a rare example of tailor making the model to the outfit.
or I could make a request for, you know, really long arms, or I don't know. I just developing characters. There was that possibility that was, you know, all to me, that was great. And as I said the other day, with the having fittings makes it so much easier when they're all just on a rack right next to your table.
Right.
Putting it on my table and pinning it in place and sticking pins wherever I want to stick the pins, and nobody's. So there were those kind of satisfactions working with puppets. And Jim had always specified, you know, as far as the costuming for the puppets, it needs to be lightweight, fluid, bright color.
Second movement was always a big consideration as well, that sense of movement after the puppeteer stopped moving the character, that things can still flow and wobble and give them movement.
Right. And it helps bring the puppet to life, you know?
Yeah.
So I tried to keep to that pretty much.
So Bonnie left at the end of the first season of The Muppet Show, and you came in. Did you go to London at that point?
No, I worked on Emmett Otter in New York, and then we flew to Toronto to shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had my one son was, I think, just about a year old at the time. So, I mean, I always had an agreement with Jim about my family, and he was wonderful about it. I like to mention that because I think I was the only one in the workshop who had children.
Mm.
Except for John Lovelady, who had some older kids, and he had a wife at home and would be the, you know, parent. But so when I did start traveling for the Muppets and going over to London, our agreement was I'd go not longer than 2 weeks, and then be back in New York for a while and then go back for another 2 weeks. But that was fine with him, and he understood that. So let me get back to Emmett Otter. So we shot it there. We came home. And then I was called in to have an interview with Jim, who was editing Emma Otter at the time. I remember being in the, looking up at this big screen while he's doing stuff, and he says to me, "Okay, Calista, what do you want to do with the Muppets?" So that was my entree to say, "Well, I want to dress them. I want to do their clothes. I want they're going to need to change their clothes. It's a variety show. We're going to need, you know."
Yes, variety.
Basically, yeah. So I talked him into it, I think, and he said yes, but you'll make puppets too. And I said, okay, I'll make puppets too. I did a few. The little babies were mine, the Bobby Benson's babies.
Oh,
yeah.
nice.
Well, they turned out to just to be kind of snarly babies. I did these drawings of little newborns with their facial, you know, how they change their face every 30 seconds. And I
Yes.
thought, oh, soft foam.
Boom,
And
yeah.
I was thinking of these sweet little puppets. And then I given putting them in the hands of Richard Hunt and Jerry Nelson and all, they just all got to be really kind of.
It's so interesting hearing the sort of projected idea of the way that they could have looked or should have looked or how you imagined them, and then having them reinterpreted in this way that we've all just received as the intention.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
But you know, that's part of the magic of puppetry is, you know, that you create this idea of a person, but it's not really a person until the puppeteer puts it on their hand and starts bouncing around with it. And that was a great thing in the workshop because we had mirrors on walls where the puppeteer could just put it on and start always working with a mirror. To see how the mouth worked and to see, you know, what they could come up with. So it was a very wonderfully impromptu art form, I think. Yeah, so I agree then, and I would work on the Muppet Show and I would be the costume designer. So that meant really within a couple of weeks, packing up, moving to London. And leaving my kids behind for a couple of weeks, they came over then to spend the summer there with me. But
Oh, nice.
that the workshop that was adjacent to the studio, I think it was a good sized space, but it hadn't really been equipped yet. I mean, there was one rack for puppets and a few tables, and you know, Bonnie will talk about the first season and how they, you know, slowly were putting together the shop. But I think in the second season, we made specific requests about more puppet bodies from the workshop and more pieces, and not to have to take things apart the minute they come off. You know, it was just didn't have enough raw material to work with. You know, if you put together characters for at the dance and they're always already they're already hired working on another number. Just the way. We needed more bodies to get going, and they totally. I remember writing a memo to Dave Laser. He, by the way, was a wonderful, wonderful man, very great producer. I mean, he's still around, I think, but he made everything possible, I have to say. I never had a budget. Nobody ever said to me, you know, you can't spend more than this. If I needed boas, I got boas. If I needed whatever, you know.
So heaven, creative utopia.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I nobody ever said to me I was spending too much money. I don't think I was spending that much money, but it was just a freedom to think, you need it, you got it. So that made a difference. Plus because we were doing more costume changes, I think that number I referred to when we talked, Danny, Quanta Lagusta, that Carmen Miranda number from
Love.
the 40s. Well, that's what I recall as being the first. I think in Jim afterwards, when they came off the set, he said something, that's our first musical number or something, my production number.
That was your first, kind of your first time really like getting Piggy out of that gray dress and making something really special for her.
I think she'd had a couple of changes by then. We were kind of feeling our way with how she should dress, and you know,
That's a silver dress, Danny, not a gray dress.
silver dress, pardon me.
character was in the process of developing. Somehow the costumes came along with the growth of her divahood, as we say. You know, what I remember about developing her style was that we started out really thinking of her with more humor, like in her clothes. You know, like, I think for me, it came from an article I read in Women's Wear Daily, that wonderful, they had a wonderful fashion journalist at the time, Chauncey Howell, and he was kind of a fashion review of Trisha Nixon's wedding at the White House. You're too young to remember that, but he referred to Martha Mitchell as wearing her very own version of Scarlett O'Hara. So I began to think of Miss Piggy and her fantasy life and how she would do her very own version of whatever it is she was looking for that day. Yep. You know? So that's a phrase I kept in my mind. I think we were doing that a lot more with Miss Piggy's Guide to Life. If you look at those, it was wackier. She had too many accessories, or she would just like throw, you know, too much is not enough. You know, when the fashion world was saying, less is more, she was saying, you know, you could just put it on. So I think we were just always going against fashion trends and making fun of the fashion world.
And that is that her very own version is her thinking she's plussing it up and making it, improving it and getting it right.
Yes, exactly. Doing her own version, making it much better because of course.
Yes.
When you started kind of costuming Miss Piggy, like Frank Oz, I think, had sort of opinions about how she should look and kind of what the costumes are.
Well, when I said to Jim, you know, we need to get Miss Piggy out of that gray dress and, you know, have a wardrobe. And he said, well, you're going to have to talk to Jim about that. I mean, you know, Frank about that. Frank, mm-hmm. you know, being a traditional puppets wore the same outfit all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think the idea was, you know, oh, they wouldn't know who she was if she didn't have that dress on. But, it, you know, it wasn't a very distinctive dress. And I think as soon as, you know, I told Frank that she was an actress backstage, she'd have to have a bathrobe, a robe to, you know, between costumes. Mm-hmm. So I did a very fluffy marabou trim thing that he could flounce around with. He had a great time with it. And, you know, after that, I didn't have any problem. Frank loved the costumes. And he would always say in interviews that all her clothes came from the House of Callista.
Right.
I love it.
So I used that later in life when I had a business.
Oh, did you actually use that? Seriously? Oh, that's so funny.
I did. I thought I'd try it out. But anyway, I remember thinking at the time, oh, that's a good name for it.
Does that mean that Miss Piggy, getting those negotiations to get Miss Piggy into a greater variety of costumes led, that sounds like it kind of opened a door to more costuming for the other characters too, less than Miss Piggy, but still.
Yeah. Whatever was needed. I mean, you know, I remember, you know, Link Hogthrob, the male pig on Pigs in Space. And yes, I did design those costumes, Dan.
Oh, you did. The Pigs in Space costumes. That's great.
Well, that was, I think they just weren't they starting that the second season? I don't think they had that in the first season. Pigs in Space. My kids loved that one. But, you know, Link, who was, you know, such a male sort of dopey protagonist.
Yeah.
When I suggested maybe he needed to have a powder blue leisure suit. I don't know if you remember leisure.
Yes.
With white belt, white shoes, like very Southern.
Yeah.
And everybody seemed to think that was perfect for him.
Yeah.
I think I just started thinking of it as you do when you're doing a soap opera. You know, you have all the characters have a wardrobe, literally a closet, where their clothes are kept. And as things come up and they need an outfit for a particular occasion, you build it and put it in the closet. So eventually Piggy, of course, had quite a closet.
Yeah.
People wanted to come and see her closet. And very often what people wanted to see were her shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And her actual, the Miss Piggy shoe originally was molded by Wendy Meisner, was that her name? She Wendy, who married Brian Froud, who were they were working on Dark Crystal on another floor of the building, and we asked her to just do a shape that would be a little piggyish, a little cloven hoofish, you know.
Yeah.
So I did this little fat shoe with a fat heel, and it was always sort of the signature of Piggy Foot.
We love the shoes. We actually had a bit of a discussion about the, I can't remember if it was on the podcast or just privately, but about the shape of the shoes and how sometimes over the years she's been sort of put in much less piggy looking shoes. Maybe just they've been in a rush or something, or whatever's happened, and it just doesn't feel the same when she doesn't have those sort of chubby, rounded.
I think really what happened as she became so popular in the fashion world, and everybody wanted to dress Miss Piggy or do a particular type of shoot for Miss Piggy, and there were different people in charge. I don't really know, because after I left, I was there maybe 10 years at most. And then, you know, it was whoever was there to meet the demand and to get the costume out there. And I don't know how much thought was going into it, or how much it was just driven by whatever the fashion was at the time. I think some
Right.
of the changes in her body had to do with just trying to make the dresses work, you know, in some way. I don't even know. That's something you really need to talk with some of the other people about, with how they managed.
I mean, I think there was in our research, we found there was a bit of an effort to quote unquote modernize her in the mid 90s.
Yeah.
I don't know how many fans are happy with that. I feel like the fans that grew up very young.
I tend to like to hold on to the classics. I mean, I don't think I would have changed her purple gloves. So, I mean, that was obviously for some shoot where they wanted to match the gloves to the dress or whatever. And I understand that those kind of pressures. But
well, I think just those gloves, I think you were the one, she had kind of silver gloves in the first season and then turned to lavender. I think you put her in the lavender gloves.
Yeah, and that sort of then was something that did dictate a lot of other color choices with her. But I don't know, I love, there's something about, do you remember there used to be an ad campaign by some mink coat company, whatever becomes a legend most, ads, Tallulah Bankhead and people like that, you know, and I always thought Miss Piggy should have done one of those, you know, with her purple gloves and her pearl.
So when you got a brief, for example, you saw a script that had a performance for Miss Piggy that was themed to a certain film or themed to a song, you would have pretty much carte blanche to how you would interpret that theme?
Yeah, and I would do the research, basically. I mean, I think there was a lot of research done in most of the Piggy stuff that I did, either historic Hollywood looks or, you know, particular old films or actors and, you know, all those Hollywood glamour photographers. Especially when we were doing the Miss Piggy calendar, Michael Frith and I would just be going through those books, loving the poses, loving the looks, and then thinking,
oh, really?
How can we do that with the pig? You know, and the one thing about Miss Piggy was the texture of her skin. Because a lot of the light that is used in those glamour photos has a human skin that's reflective, that makes it glow. And finding that was always a frustration for Michael, because she absorbed the light. She didn't reflect the light. You know, her skin is not reflective. But that's just a minor, you know. I want you to know, I'm skipping around a lot, but I want you to know that doing the big photo shoots for that, like Miss Piggy calendar, took days. It was, you know, getting everything in place and then tweaking. And then with each, this was film. We were shooting film. It was not digital photography. So we would take Polaroid after Polaroid after Polaroid and look at, you know,
to figure out, like, are these little details actually working,
tiny details,
oh my gosh,
perfect. It was so painstaking.
I want those Polaroids.
Yeah, I wonder what happened to most of them. Gone. I don't know. But those would give us our direction and proportions and move things around and just get the composition what we want it to be. And they were really elaborate
Yeah.
production.
It really shows. They're exquisite images. I look at them often just to get a dose of serotonin.
Oh, it's my dream that someday they'll be at the Museum of the Moving Image, a nice big show of all those pictures, because they're
Yeah.
there. I wish a whole new generation could see them. And
Yeah.
was such a class act, though, those Piggy calendars. The editor was Robert Gottlieb, famous, editor who's done every famous writer there is. He loved Miss Piggy, and Jane Leventhal, who came to Muppets to develop the whole the book editor, all the books that we were doing. She was in charge of that, and she introduced us to Bob Gottlieb, and he just really enjoyed it, and it was great. And she gets a mention in his obituary. He died this fall.
Oh.
So as a client, along with all the other famous writers and people.
That's that marvelous thing of the satire of this kind of Hollywood goddess, deluded Hollywood goddess pig. Suddenly she becomes that. Like she actually is attracting that level of entourage
I
and
know.
artist.
That's what was so fascinating about it, with all these different magazines and people wanting. Well, at one point, you were talking about her body and the changes they wanted to make. But at one point, there were a whole group of Hollywood costume designers that wanted to design something for Miss Piggy, and it was kind of a publicity thing. But we had to explain, that her body wasn't like, it's not a,
Right.
leggy supermodel here.
Yeah.
That I don't know. I mean, I always kind of discouraged it and said no, all her clothes came from the House of Callista, but
Well, I think I saw at one point I saw they were quoting her measurements that I think were something like 27, 30, 32.
Well, they would. I think they all had done some sketches for some LA, Sunday magazine or something, of their ideas of clothes for Miss Piggy, and it was just, a model, the usual fashion sketch with a pig head on the top.
That's
It
terrifying.
was See, we've gotten to just the second season of The Muppet Show. Then we came home and started work immediately on the Muppet movie. And that summer was spent in LA shooting the Muppet movie. I mean, really, when I say lickety split, we never had breaks. It was
Yeah.
just one to one. And that's the way Jim worked. He loved his work, he loved his life, and he just was always working. And he expected everybody else to have that same schedule.
Well, so the Muppet Show, I know you earlier had told me just about like the weekly pace of
Yeah.
building that. Can you talk about that a little bit?
It would start with the table read, with everybody sitting around the table with the script, all the characters doing, all the puppeteers there to do their various different voices, and the guest star, of course. That's when we all met the guest star for the first time. And it was always kind of an uproarious kind of event of just, it was great fun to like hear the first read through, and then some. Oh, there were always a few script changes, and usually driven by the guest star that wanted something different or another number added or whatever it was. Anyway, so it would move from that Sunday to Monday, Tuesday, I think, were build days. Those were the days that we had in the workshop to throw stuff together. And we would know in advance, with scripts, what were some of the scripts that were coming up, what were the ideas that were coming up. So it wasn't totally by the seat of your pants, but it always was. There were a lot of last minute changes, but And then I believe they shot, Amy would be the one to talk to about this. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday were shoot days. And we would be continuing to work on a schedule, knowing when the number was coming up. I'd still be working through those days to get things finished, or maybe starting to prep the next show coming up. But there was always a lot to do.
When did it feel like Miss Piggy really specifically was taking off in a way that was bigger than just the Muppets?
Yeah, I think this is a question you could ask anybody who was there at the time. Like, when do you think she really just took off? And it had a lot to do with the publicity. I would be sent out on these interviews for television, you know, with the Charles Kuralt, Morley Safer. I was on at the time of Muppets Take Manhattan, near the opening of Muppets Take Manhattan, I did an interview on the Good Morning America, introduced as the woman with the best job in the world. So how about that? She was definitely, you know, had become a media personality. She was on the cover of People magazine, Life magazine. Did a whole spread about that was the first time. In fact, Nancy Moran did the photos for that. It was the first time they allowed photographers into the workshop and let them photograph a whole drawer of eyes. And because of that, Jim for a long time did not want to see puppets in pieces.
Yes.
Allowed it for that particular introduction to the world of the Muppets.
Yeah. Was that Life magazine article, does that predate the Muppets and Men book?
I think it would have been an election year because she was running for president.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the cover. I know that issue very well. August 1980. I had that. I treasured that. It had like Piggy
press on the cover. There are pictures of me in Michael's office, and we're, you know, kind of doing what we did. Michael would just be drawing the whole time, and I would be talking, and we'd come up with ideas. It was just a wonderful experience. And he contributed a lot. I feel Michael's kind of, he's moved to Bermuda and we don't hear from him that much, but he was a person that was very much directing the Miss Piggy fantasy that we did. I mean, in the press, in the books, in the photographs.
So he would be doing sketches?
The final picture of each Miss Piggy calendar would have been taken from a sketch of Michael's that we'd talked about, we'd worked on, we'd, you know, sort of tweaked the ideas, and he'd finally do a kind of complete sketch that we could follow. And he was very much in the studio all the time too. He loved doing it.
And his taste was always so, or at least the way he applied it to Miss Piggy was always so in line with that Golden Age Hollywood pin-up kind of, love it.
A favorite story, we were on the east side of New York, and we were talking about doing Miss Piggy. It was one, maybe for what, was it a calendar shot or was it the Art of the Muppets? I think it was a calendar shot where she's a girl on the swing in the 18th century. It was taken from a Fragonard painting that's hanging at the Frick Museum, and Michael and I walked over to look at it at lunch. That was really, you know, that's the joy of being in New York.
It's been, you know, I've read a lot in the press where people say, like, this was your, that designing specifically for Miss Piggy was a full-time job.
Well, it became my full-time job because there was so much demand for her on personal appearances. You know, it would be like overnight you'd need to whip up something for an appearance on some show she was doing, or that, you know, I guess the products also. I mean, I was on the licensing committee, and we would meet, you know, at least once or twice a week, maybe with different licensees that would come in who wanted to show us the direction of what they were doing, and we'd either correct it or love it or ask them to start over again, you know, whatever. But there were so many companies that were license to do Muppet products, that they opened a store in New York, Muppet Stuff. They had their retail store for a few years with this product.
I know that Hallmark just did an unbelievable amount of Piggy material.
Yes, and I'm remembering now that sometimes there would be requests for particular looks, but we would control it from New York in terms of, you know, sending out costumes for that shoot. Need to talk with some of the art directors in the art department, because they would go out and do the shoots. I never did shoots at Hallmark. But, you know,
So those would be Hallmark people who went and supervised the shoots?
No, people from the Muppet Art Department.
Oh, I see.
A lot of different artists that work within the art department did the artwork for any kind of drawings that were needed for the licensed products.
Oh, I see.
There was a whole manual that they were given to companies we were working with about how to draw the Muppets, and, you know, very specific.
The style guide.
Yeah, style guide, exactly.
Yeah. Was there any, just as a quick aside, were there any products that you remember being pitched to you that were just really wrong? Did anything stick in your mind?
Oh, yes. And we were very frank about it. The first Miss Piggy doll that came in from Fisher-Price.
Yeah.
This giant head.
Right.
This big pig head with very, you know, it wasn't realistic at all. And we sent them back to the drawing board and said, no, we don't want this big molded head. We want to have a doll you could play with clothes. Yeah. Yeah. I designed little simple dresses that were easy to take on and off, and you could have some play value to, that's what they call it in the business.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. So you made like those Fisher Price dress up dolls. You actually designed those clothes?
Yeah, and there were, you could buy clothes for her. There was the purple dress, of course, and there was, I forgot, she had a little jacket maybe, and
I think it was a sailor suit.
A turban as well.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
So can I ask?
Yes.
Just the licensed products, because this is a thing that I love very much. That you, I'm so happy to learn, such a nerd, but I'm so happy to learn that you designed the dress up dolls, because I really love those dolls.
Me too.
Did you design other products?
Well, the shoes I did, the Miss Piggy shoe for kids. We had a license with kids. I think maybe there were other characters, maybe Scooter, the Scooter design, or maybe
there was a Kermit and there was a Fozzie.
Yeah. So I designed the Miss Piggy sneaker that had a sole with hearts on it, so that when you left the footprint behind on the running track, you'd see little hearts.
And so I guess you could probably tell that you designed those, because I think there was like pink satin on it.
Yeah, I think it was
the
all
lavender. Yeah,
it was not a serious shoe, but you could wear it. And, you know, they were cats. Cats are good. I had some other ideas, but that we didn't pursue those anyway. And that was a fun product to work on.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think of what else. So we had sheets. There were bed sheets, two different eras. That I still have the Miss Piggy comforter in my storage unit. Oh my god.
I love that.
There were several different designs, actually, over the years. One started out that was too dark and nobody liked it, and then the others were a little...
Well, they were very Art Deco.
Yeah, those first ones were.
Yeah.
I've donated a lot of stuff to the Museum of the Moving Image, my notebooks and things. Well, you know, one story I'd love to tell... It's not really about Miss Piggy so much, but it was about the way Jim, the way the company was managed when I was there. There was a yearly kind of company meeting they would have, and it would be a Tavern on the Green in Central Park. And we would talk, questions would be answered about, you know, suggestions for guest stars on the show. That was my favorite part, where people in the workshop would say, why can't we have Margaret Mead and Isaac Asimov, and what, you know, all these other kinds of characters. And basically Jim, because he had Bernie Brillstein as his agent, he was listening to Bernie's suggestion for people that had what they called TVQ, people that were going to be, popular to the audience, that people would tune in to see this guest star. So anyway, I found that interesting because there was such a dichotomy in many ways between all the people that were building the puppets and the commerciality of actually making a successful show for American television, you know.
You want to talk about her colors?
Well, yeah, I had decided early on that we would limit the colors that she wore, and that I assumed because she was the pig leaving the farm, this sounds corny, but that she didn't wear earth tones. She wore fantasy colors, pinks, purples, blues. And so we really stuck to that color range. I mean, obviously there were changes in different costumes as needed, but I wouldn't put her in brown or green or yellow, which, so this goes to my story you haven't heard, I don't think, Pete, but when they were doing Miss Piggy on the Rose Bowl parade on a big float, and they sent a list of the flowers that were being used and the colors, and they said that she would be dressed in yellow chrysanthemums, and I said, oh no, she doesn't wear yellow. And I made a call to somebody there, and I insisted that they change the color. And Danny has just provided me with a picture of the float where they did put her in purple. I don't even remember that. I thank you for sending. But it was just a funny.
And they talked about you. You said they talked about you on the air.
Yeah, on the air, there's some met my they were talking, how they chat as the floats are going by, and Michael Landon said, yeah, and there was some woman at the Muppets who called us and told us she wouldn't wear yellow, she has to wear purple. And so
Brilliant. House of Callista has banned the yellow.
the secret there.
Yeah.
So here's the thing I want to say about designing for the puppets,
Yeah.
and especially on the Muppet Show, where everything went so quickly. I learned early on that you have to make it so clear, so simple, so clear, that it's almost like designing by cliche is what I call it. Because, they write a little bit about a Wagnerian opera singer. So how are you going to do that and have it run across the stage and know what you're looking at? So you have to, okay, what do I think of when I hear Wagnerian opera singer? So of course it's the helm and the horns, but just having to break things down really simply. And the things that worked the best were the ones that could read the quickest, the easiest to identify right away. And it's only really the top of the body most of the time that you're seeing. So very little nuance and subtlety when you're it's moving so quickly, and you want to know what it means. So that was a big learning curve for me too. And I think what was wonderful at the studio where we were shooting, it was an old-time TV studio that had everything there, the cafeteria, the shop. There was a latex shop where you could have things molded. There was a library. There was a library to go, like look up something if you wanted to get, you were doing I can't think now, flamenco or a gypsy, something where you wanted to see an image. It was all there. So
Oh,
it
that's
was
amazing.
a really a wonderful melting pot, creative melting pot. The music studio was right there. And Jim, occasionally, if they were doing a musical number and he wanted to sing along with Pearl Bailey, or I don't know, it was kind of, you could step in and be a part of it. There was a moment when Jane Leventhal had just started working at Muppets, and she caught Jim and I talking on the stairs, where it was just before the Thanksgiving Day parade, and the Muppets were getting their act together to be, I think Piggy and Kermit were going to be in a limo going by waving. And I was trying to talk Jim into having a voiceover so that the audience or the people that were standing there would hear Miss Piggy's voice. And Jane just listened to this conversation aghast, and she was like, You really believe that she's a real person? Yes, of course. Of course I do, And that was just true with the Muppets. They were all very. Then, of course, I was dead wrong. There was so much noise at the parade, you couldn't have
Couldn't
heard
hear it
me.
anyway. Oh, that's funny.
There was that give and take. We were allowed to, Jim was wonderful in his being interested in everybody's opinion on the floor of the studio. If something wasn't working, he'd ask any kind of, gaffer or person standing around what they thought of it, and be interested to hear what those responses were. He was very, very tuned into that, what was popular and what worked. You mentioned here in the Muppet movie, Danny, the Claudette Colbert outfit. I'm not sure I
Yes.
know what you meant by that.
Oh,
Was
that's
by the
the
side of the road when she's
side of the
hitchhiking?
road, yeah, from It Happened One Night.
Yeah, okay, but she's in a little white blouse, black skirt,
Yeah.
and red neck. And the story is because we'd been had such a rush to get the new Piggy, Miss Piggy molded heads done, the neck on some of them was just disintegrating for some reason.
Oh.
Whatever the chemical mix was, it didn't work. So
Ah.
a nice little red neck scarf served the purpose of covering what was going on underneath it.
Fascinating. Yeah, because I was wondering that, because Colbert wears a sort of chevron-y kind of
Yeah, no, it had nothing to do with that, except that she was hitchhiking, sitting in a suitcase. But those early Muppet bodies were just pieces, that we would like add the legs if we needed to. Wasn't until we had the photo studio and the workshop made us photo puppets, complete bodies that we could, pose them without them all falling apart. I mean, those first two Miss Piggy calendars, we didn't have posable puppets. We just
Really? Yeah.
pieces.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. I think I'm pretty sure that's true. Maybe we had a posable Miss Piggy. But mostly it was just take the puppets and, use some gaffer's tape and put on some armature wire from behind and make the arms stand up or pose it. It was very slapdash.
Yeah, can't tell at all.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
You say it was slapdash, and
It's
yet they were these exquisitely designed pieces of work.
Right. Have you seen them from behind? Maybe now.
Yeah.
Photo from behind. Every now and then we would just laugh about it because you walk behind and then it's all like gaffer's tape and
Wires and everything.
I love that. I mean, honestly, that's probably behind a lot of photo shoots.
yes, it's true. Before I worked at Muppets, I did work as a photo stylist with Carl Fisher, who was a photographer in New York who did a lot of magazine covers, and he would call me when he needed somebody to be there for costumes and or to make something particular for a costume cover. So I had that additional experience as well as the costume construction workshop.
And what was the schedule? Because you mentioned each image would take a couple of days to pose and set up and figure out lighting wise and all of those things. What was the schedule overall for 12 calendar images?
I think we would probably maybe do two a week if
Okay.
we're lucky. I mean, a really elaborate one with
Yeah.
bubble and just, I don't know. The very early ones really took a long time.
Yeah.
Once we had the photo studio and we had all our stuff in one place, it made a lot of sense. I mean,
I think you said you did the first, like, was it the first calendar or the first two calendars that was at somebody else's studio?
Nancy Moran.
Yeah.
Nancy had done a lot of photography for Muppets. She did the photos for that Life magazine
Oh, okay.
article, and she was the first one to sort of talk Jim into, I guess, taking pictures of the naked Muppets. Her studio was down in 20th Street, and it was a constant schlep back and forth, and then we'd find out we didn't have everything we needed. It was very disorganized, and I think those big photo shoots went much more easily when we had everything in one place.
Yeah.
That's when John Barrett moved in and did. That's what I wanted to check with you. Did we already check that Nancy Moran did the second calendar too? Yeah, we did.
I am not sure. The Muppet Wiki page that I'm looking at doesn't actually say the photographer for the
Okay.
second one. The first one it does say that was Nancy.
Yeah. I think she did the second one too. But then how many? Five in total or four? I should know this, but you probably know it better than I
Five.
do. Five. Okay.
Yeah, there was the first one, the Cover Girls, then there was the Great Lovers of the Silver Screen.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes.
The Calendar of Calendars, and then there was the Kermitage, the art masterpieces.
Oh, yes. That was the final one. Yeah. That wasn't really a Miss Piggy calendar, but that, see, okay, I'd like to talk now then about the staff that we put together at the photo studio.
Yeah.
Because that came, that art masterpieces definitely came out of our photo studio staff. We didn't have a lot of space, but we did have a small room that used to be the room that Foz had been in when I first started Emmett Otter. Anyway, Bruce and Deborah had that room. Deborah Lombardi was the costume designer, and Bruce Borasco, her husband, was sets and props, and had staff, a couple of carpenter, let's see, Dennis Smith and Carl. And anyway, we could build the props, we could build the set, we could build the costumes all on one floor of the building, and that really made things work much more smoothly. I have a funny story to tell about that first summer when we had set up the studio, and the first big project was Miss Piggy's Guide to Life. I had been getting letters for months from a student at Carnegie Mellon, Carnegie Tech, who wanted to come to New York and be, have a summer job with the Muppets, and dying to come, dying to come, kept writing, kept saying we didn't have a position available and whatever. Finally, I met this kid, turns into Lyndon Mossey. I don't know if you know the name, but he became an art director at the Muppets. But he was a
So
kid.
that technique worked.
He was so smitten with the Muppets, and he just wanted to come. And I said, "Well, maybe if you could take it as internship, I'd like you could be my shopper for the Miss Piggy's Guide to Life, because there's a
Oh,
lot of
wow.
things that we have to get, and you know your way around New York." He was a New York kid.
Yeah.
So one of the first jobs I gave him, I said, "I don't think you're going to find this, but just to see if you can, I need a Barca lounger, one of those chairs that tips back and puts your feet up. I need a Barca lounger that's Kermit scale.
Yes.
Do you believe such a thing ever would? I was
Definitely
assuming
not.
to build it, but then I sent Lyndon out, and in one day he found a Barca lounger for Kermit, and it was just like, oh my God,
Wow.
where have you been all my life? Yes,
Oh,
of
that's
course we'll
great.
pay you. Yes, and he did, and he made it his career. I think he still works. You know what he discovered, which was very interesting, that in Hispanic neighborhoods where they had like family department stores, you could get a three-piece suit for somebody really little, like a 3-year-old. They like to dress, a lot of immigrant families, they like to dress their little children in grown-up clothes.
Yes, that rings a bell, yeah.
Mission for all of us working with puppets, because if you had a big number where you had to have 3-piece suits on a whole lot of bodies, you could find them and alter them and put, not have to start from scratch. So
Yes.
I think the Barca lounger was one of, some crazy idea for, gift for a kid, I
A
guess.
kid.
That, you just can't believe what you can find in New York City. But anyway, Linda is very, very hardworking, and adventurous, and he stuck around.
Are there kind of favorite standout costumes that you can think of? What do you remember as looks that you really love?
Well, I think really, if you want to study Miss Piggy's evolution, you have to go back to the Muppet movie and look at the montage.
Mm.
Sees Kermit for the first time, because I think that's really where, in my mind, we started this Miss Piggy fantasy. And it was Jim Frawley, the Muppet movie, who very specific requests about what he wanted to see as they went through this montage, and what, you know, the running through the meadow and the Tom Jones outfit, the darker gray boxy fur coat and hat that's more noir. And what were the other? There's one other look. Oh,
there's in the boat as well with the wide brimmed hat.
Yeah, the Victorian floating by in the boat. Yeah. But I don't know. I think the way that comes into the movie, and she sees him and the sparkle in her eye, and then the fantasy just goes off.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That's really where that was a springboard somehow for getting into.
Mm.
These fantasies were, and just allowing it to go.
That makes a lot of sense. It's this kind of unfolding catalog of looks rather than just sort of a specific look for a mm-hmm. performance to her imagination.
Favorite moment in that movie is when they say, "Oh well, we're driving to California. We're going to be in the movies," and. When they say something like, and you want to join us? And then, you know, 30 seconds later, she's with her suitcase packed with her travel outfit.
Yeah.
After she's been in the beauty pageant, she's just like, instantly, there, I'm coming. I don't know. Do you have a favorite of those movies? Which one would you say is?
Oh, I love The Great Muppet Caper.
You did.
Okay. Yeah, just because it's so Piggy focused. Also, it's a screwball comedy, and I love screwball comedies of that period. And you dress Piggy in these gorgeous, I think, like really inspired outfits.
You know that so much of it you need to understand is it's you're designing a costume and you want it to be appropriate to the character, but you're also maybe trying to hide a 6-foot puppeteer underneath
right.
it.
Yeah,
and so that, you know, like her. Some kind of cape I designed for the fashion show where she falls.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, that was just a really long cape because Frank had to be under it. What would be your fondest wish for Miss Piggy's future?
Are you asking both of us?
Yeah.
I'll jump in because
you actually have it designed already in your head.
Yeah, I do. I really, really think she needs to do really premium imagery again, like the calendars. And aside from that, I don't know if it was ever said, but I worked on the Muppets, the Jason Segel Muppets movie from 2011, and one of the jobs that I did. A prop painting for it, but the other job I had on it was to consult on the kind of rebuild of the Miss Piggy puppet to make her look more reminiscent of her glory days. So I'm very passionate about all of, you know, the quality of her wigs, the look of her, the eye design, and all of those aspects. And I just would really like to see her aesthetically elevated again, also maybe played a little differently, but I think her having that world of fantasy around her that's done with such kind of exquisite curation is such a key part of not only her image being out there in a really quality way, but also just it's just so she gets funnier the more art is put into her presentation. Mm. Because if she's just kind of put together in a like a child's dress and, you know, her hair's looking a bit flat, then so much of the comedy is taken away, but it's the way, it's her level of narcissism that makes us so hilarious.
Well, you know, I just think she needs to be reintroduced to a new generation.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have great memories of her, but if she's not out there and in imagery and in performance, you don't there's a whole several generations who missed out on knowing who Miss Piggy is.
I feel like there's, when I was watching it with my friend's daughters, they were loving the movie, but there was a couple of comments earlier on, just like, I love her dress, like just little girl comment, but she's like, I love her dress, but I don't know about her face. And I was like, well, she's a lady pig. She's very glamorous. She's a pig lady. And I'm like, and really thoughtful faces, like, I guess a pig can be beautiful, like, you know, standing in the head. So yeah, I
Well,
think.
if she had an opportunity to see the development of her,
Yes.
I think that would be different.
There's something that I have this is my nerdy dream just for the Muppets in general is, you know, they did a couple live shows they did at the Hollywood Bowl several years ago and then one at London's O2. And for those, they just did the Muppet Show, like
Oh, yeah.
a variety show again with comedy and with songs and huge crowds because they're enormous theaters and people loved it. And I've seen lots of like film of people like at the O2 and they just absolutely loved it. But when people talk about like bringing the Muppets back for another project for TV or for anything, they always say, oh, we couldn't possibly do a variety show. Like we'd never, you know, Muppets Tonight kind of made a shot at it. But even Muppets Tonight didn't really do songs in the way that the Muppet Show did. I would love for them to try, make something for Disney Plus that's like a variety show, and then that's a context where Miss Piggy can exist and make sense.
Really, for all of us, is knowing what are the plans, what is Disney, and why haven't they jumped at the opportunity to keep these characters alive? I know they have a hard it's very hard for them to understand the art of puppeteering, basically. And, you know, they keep talking about so and so. You know, Dave Goles is Gonzo's voice. Without realizing, no, he's gone. He's gone. You know, he's moving the puppet. He's creating the character. I don't know. I'd love it to continue on some level because I think kids love it. And I know a lot of kids whose parents are, you know, just have the DVDs of the Muppet shows and they watch the Muppet shows and they love.
Well, Calissa, one thing that I want to ask about is about you, sort of after once you were still working with the Muppets into the 80s, and then what was your transition? What happened next for you?
I was kind of feeling like I needed a break from the Muppets and took a job with a show that Lorne Michaels was doing. He was giving up Saturday Night Live and doing the new show. Do you remember the new show?
No.
It didn't
I
last
don't either.
just one season, but it had a wonderful cast, Catherine O'Hara and a bunch of people. I joined a friend of mine who had been working on Saturday Night Live, and we did that, and that was an interesting break. I did a soap opera for a while. I then did a show called Encyclopedia, which was an interesting kids' sketch comedy show. It was a collaboration between HBO and Children's Television Workshop, and it. We had a female impersonator. Ethel Eichelberger was one of the characters who would, he did a lot of stuff in drag, and a girl group called Betty. And it was just Faith Prince was in it. Nobody really saw it because it was the time when HBO was just sort of coming into its own, and not that people, that many people at HBO. I mean, so a lot of it is on YouTube now. But I did get an Emmy Award for costume design for that because it was all bizarrely, you know, a chicken within an egg and a, you odd costume challenges.
And that's the encyclopedia show. I need to
Yes.
look it up.
Well, just go to YouTube. You can see some of the sketches. Maybe it's not all great by any means, but it was a stretch. Then I decided to switch careers. Did you know I did that?
No, no. What did you do then?
Well, I was finding myself volunteering all over the place. It was during the AIDS epidemic. There was just so much going on that seemed, you know, I needed to do it to get into a more caring profession. So I just left costume design behind. I went back to school, became an occupational therapist.
Oh, wow.
And when I explained to people, how did I do that? You know, that's like something so different.
Yeah.
But anyways, I feel like it was, I had been good at creative problem solving with the Muppets. And then I moved into a totally other area where the jobs were everywhere. I had as many jobs as I wanted. I didn't have to chase after some kind of costume job that I didn't really feel like I wanted anymore. I mean, I feel like I was very spoiled all those years with the Muppets, that it was just wonderful. And I didn't feel like I needed to stick around for that any longer, and I was very glad. I've had a very meaningful other 25-year career working with children with disabilities and solving their problems. So
that is wonderful.
Well, I've retired now from two careers.
Well, now you're just cheering us up today.
I just really enjoy remembering it and talking about it. So I thank you both very much. It's so nice to talk to people who understand it.
Thank you so much for talking to us. This has been like such a dream.
Good. Wonderful. For me too.
Yeah.
It's great to get to know you, and I will stay in touch.
I would love that. Yay. Thank you. Thank you to the delightful Peter Savieri for joining me as my co-host today. And kissy kissy and thank you for listening to this episode of the Fantastic Miss Piggy podcast, brought to you by my friends at toughpigs.com. Coming up in the next episode, it is the season finale for the podcast, and I will be telling you the story of Campo, the committee to award Miss Piggy the Oscar. It is a David and Goliath story where everyone is out of their minds, so come back for that. A big thank you to Johannes and Tough Pigs for making this project possible, and special thanks to the editors of Muppet Wiki for giving me just what I need anytime I need it. If you have comments or questions, or you know stuff about Miss Piggy that you'd like to share, you can write to me at fantasticmisspiggy@gmail.com. That's fantasticmisspiggy@gmail. And please do. It's been really nice hearing from people. I'm also on X at fantasticmissp, or come and join us on the Tough Pigs Discord. Thank you, everyone. I'll see you next time.
Gee, I'd like to see you looking swell, baby. Diamond bracelets Woolworth doesn't sell, baby. Till that lucky day, you know darn well, baby, I can't give you anything but love.